Blog Talk Radio.
And thanks. Mojuba Akoda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun to all the God children, Mojuba Egun to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun to all those that are listening. Who are tuned in, we give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe, Ashe, Ashe, welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC, the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights, and New Power Radio Network. We'd like you to please support our sponsors, Manhood Raising Culture, headed up by Dr. James Jones, my co-host on this evening, and every Tuesday night. And also please support Unity Design, and Unity is spelled U-N-I-T-E-E. Please reach out to Arlie Gordon from Unity and Dr. James Jones from Manhood Raising Culture, because they definitely could use your love and support, because they love and support us here on Sign of the Times New Power Radio Network. For those of you who may not know, today is Prince's birthday. So I'm going to get this one in and get it over with, and probably an outro too. But I hope you enjoy this as much as I do. You're listening to Sign of the Times. My name is Queen Tahira. My co-host tonight is Dr. James Jones. And we're going to be discussing the greatest of all time. And we all know who that is athletically. Prince is the greatest of all time musically. But athletically, it's got to be none other than the ancestor, our beloved brother, Muhammad Ali. So please enjoy this Prince ditty. You've got time to make a cup of tea and dance your way back to your telephone or your computer. This is Queen Tahira. You're listening to Sign of the Times. We'll be right back.
Harlem. Dougie gonna be there, but you got to call him. Even the soldiers need a break sometimes. Listen to the groove, y'all. Let it unwind your mind. No intoxication. Let you see what I see. Dancing hot and sweaty. Right in front of me. Oh, call it what you like. I'm a woman I be. This is just another one of God's gifts. Musicology. Got to keep the party moving. Like they told you. Keep the old school joint. For the true funk soldiers. Musicology. Wait a minute, babe. Wish I had a dollar for every time you say. Don't you miss the feeling music gave you back in the day? Let's groove September. Earth, wind, and fire. Pants by chain. Slides don't take you higher. Minor keys and drums.
Coast to coast, hips and lips, chips and wits.
All right, y'all, I apologize for the audio on I Would Die For You. It did not sound like that when I recorded it, so I had to bring it back with Musicology. And I know, he did it. He did the damn thing, as he always did. Peace, Dr. Jones. Welcome to Sign of the Times. How you doing?
I'm great, Queen. How you doing today?
I'm kind of celebrating, but not, I felt this way on my brother's birthday too. It's like, we have to get to the point where we appreciate the time that was spent, and the good things that were left in memory. And Prince definitely left us with a lot of good music. So I'm celebrating despite my heart still. How you doing?
I'm good. Just trying to get back into the groove of going to work and dealing with all of that that comes with that. So, but I'm good. I won't complain about anything.
That's what's up. We lost another great one over the weekend.
Most definitely. Lost the greatest, you know, the greatest, without a doubt. So, been dealing with that. I'm a huge boxing fan, you know, but it was the era of Leonard and Hagler and Hearns that I remember the most. But I do remember Ali fighting Holmes. Yeah.
Yeah, I found a little bit of audio of Brother Muhammad Ali, and if you don't mind, I'd like to you know, kind of kick the discussion off so that we can get to know him on a level that, you know, some may not have ever really heard him speak, some may not have really been a part of that era where he was, you know, an active boxer. Oh, my God. What the hell was that? Did you fall down the steps?
No, I apologize for that. That was an ice maker being used.
Oh, okay. Okay. As long as you're okay. Yeah, so
I'm fine.
So I record. Go ahead.
No, I just said I'm fine. I didn't fall down the stairs. That's an ice maker.
Okay. So I have a couple of pieces from Brother Ali, and I'd like to check them out. And I hope the listening audience gets to know him a little bit more. For those who were not around when he was an active boxer in the ring, and to hear some of the interviews on, you know, Howard Cosell, he and Howard used to go at it all the time. Something used to come on Saturdays. He and Howard Cosell used to always go at it. And in a very humorous and sometimes, you know, blatantly, I guess, fight the power kind of way. So if this is about 10 minutes long, please enjoy it. It's called Ali, I Am the Greatest.
It will be a killer and a chiller and a thriller when I get the gorilla in Manila.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Cassius Marcellus Clay. He's young, he's handsome.
They know it.
I can pound a drink of water and kill a dead tree. Don't mess with Muhammad Ali.
I've done something special. I've wrestled with an alligator. I've tussled with a whale. Out of handcuffed lightning, throw thunder in jail.
I'm as confident as I say, and I'm better than I say I am.
I'm a poor. I'm a prophet, I'm the resurrector, I'm the savior of the boxing world. If it wasn't for me, the game would be dead.
Who would bet on Clive Patterson beating me? Who would bet on Ernie Terrell beating me? I told you I was floating like a butterfly and sting like a bee.
I'm gonna float like a butterfly and sting like a bee.
His hands can't hit what his eyes can't see.
Last week I murdered a rock, injured a stone, hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean I make medicine sick.
I'm young. I'm the real champion. I told you, I'm the champion of the world. All of you bow.
He will be mine in round 9. And if he makes me sore, I'll cut it to 4.
Thank you very much.
And if that don't do, we'll get him in 2.
I'm flat on my back instead of a suit.
Represent you a second.
These represent dynamite.
I am surrounded at the moment by two massive men.
Now why you gotta be the one of all people of color to keep saying Cassius Clay?
Why don't you call me my name, man?
Well, what's your name?
My name is Muhammad Ali, and you will announce it right there in the center of that ring. Absolutely, if you don't do it now. Acting just like an old Uncle Tom. Another fly title. I'm gonna punish you.
Teddy, to humiliate him, I hardly think it's necessary.
I'm out to be cruel. That's what the boxing game is about. I'm awful serious.
Give me a nice serious look.
Well, just sound like I'm crying to you. As loud as I'm hollering, you call me quiet. I'm hollering loud because I'm about to back up every word. I don't want anybody out there on TV to know it. I am the greatest.
Close your mouth. Keep it closed.
Well,
right.
Well, you know that's impossible.
No, no, no. Keep it closed.
You know that's impossible. I'm the greatest. And I'm knocking out all the doors. And if you get too smart, I'll knock you out.
Yeah, I'm going to hit you six times before you count two.
I say go count. Go. One, two. You want to see it again?
Let me tell you how I adjust my sleep. I go to my bedroom, hit the switch, cut the lights out, and be in the bed before the room is dark.
Gentlemen.
And cut that spirit off of a night like a ago.
You always said, Muhammad, you're not the man you were 10 years ago, right?
Right.
Well, I'm going to ask your wife, are you the man you was last year?
You'll get a quick answer to that.
Give me five. Okay,
you're
man.
Dirty, but your face is too dirty.
You're being extremely truculent.
Whatever truculent means, that's good. I'm there.
You're not a stupid boy. Let's
thank
not
you, Howard. You're not as dumb as you look.
The slave name, I'm no longer a slave. What does it mean? Muhammad means long phrases, and Ali means most high.
No, the black Muslim is the name you give it and the press give it. We're not black Muslims. My religion is Islam, which means peace.
Everything good of authority was made white. We look at Jesus, we see a white with blonde hair and blue eyes. Now I'm sure if there's a heaven in the sky and the colored folks die and go to heaven, I wear the colored angels. They must be in the kitchen preparing the milk and honey.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Muhammad Ali has just refused to be inducted into the United States Armed Forces.
No, I will not move in off the mile from here to help murder and kill another four people simply to continue the domination of white slave now over the dark of the...
Your religion says you not to kill, but you will kill. Because you're giving up your religion teaching. I'm not giving up my side for no government.
Whatever the punishment, whatever the persecution is for standing up for my religious beliefs, even if it means facing machine guns for that day, I will face it before denouncing the religion of Islam. I'm ready to die.
I have a religion, which is the religion of Islam, that most people don't understand and they don't see the light.
It has been said that I have two alternatives. Either go to jail or go to the army. But I would like to say that there is another alternative. And that alternative is justice.
Took my step back because I am a Muslim. There are 750 million more that believe just like me.
I am bigger than boxers. I am bigger than all the champions. Put together, I'm bigger than the Super Bowl, the Rose Bowl, the Kentucky Derby, the 500. When I go, the world, truly, the world listens.
And now here come Cassius, the exact contrast of everything that was representative of the Negro image. He said he was the greatest, all of the odds were against him, he upset the odds makers, he won, he became victorious, he became the champ.
Thank you.
ranked as the greatest of all time.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Sign of the Times, brought to you by New Power Radio Network. Tonight is Tuesday night with Dr. James Jones and Queen Tahira. What you just heard was called Ali, I Am the Greatest, and it was just a bunch of clips that I guess, you know, was pretty much a timeline of the things that he had experienced and been through in his life, not only on the sports arena, but in his normal everyday life as well, especially as being a Muslim. So I yield to you, Dr. Jones. Tell us about the topic and why you chose it and what Brother Ali meant to you. I think you're muted, Dr. Jones. Dr. Jones, going once. Dr. Jones, going twice. All right, I think our beloved brother must be having some technical difficulties, not unless I am on the studio board.
I'm here. I'm here. Hello?
Okay, so tell us what Brother Muhammad Ali meant to you and why you chose tonight's topic.
You know, Ali is sort of like that that perfect blend of what happens to a super talented, educated black man living in a hostile white world. You know, he is the greatest, considered the greatest, will always be considered the greatest by me because of what he overcome. You know, Ali was not undefeated even in the ring, but he was real enough and public enough to not only at a certain moment adopt black nationalism, another moment, separate himself from the Nation of Islam, you know, but throughout the entire thing, he's been human in working for humanity. So he gets nothing but props from me, and I yield with that, Queen.
Ashe, you know, not unsimilar to what we spoke about as far as Brother Malcolm speaking truth to power. And I think that what made Ali different is that, you know, he was outgoing, but still got his point across in a very humorous and identifiable way. Malcolm was more a preacher. Brother Ali was a talented entertainer and very lyrically inclined to not only tell you the truth, but make it rhyme at the same time. And, you know, that was pre-hip-hop, you know. He was doing hip-hop when hip-hop didn't have a name. And, you know, like I said, I remember him and his exchanges with Howard Cosell and how humorous they were at times. But he sure enough had Howard wrapped around his finger, whereas other people may have been intimidated by him. Muhammad Ali was not. So on a personal level, what is it about Brother Ali's character that, you know, we can identify with in 2016, but also what you identified with, you know, watching him and his career? And I yield.
You know, the thing is, and I think that you're right on it when you're talking about his humor, his affability, his approachability. Although he's a fighter, There's no one that in their right mind who would have been afraid to approach him. Those barbs that he does with Howard Cosell, you know, they represent who we are. And I would argue who we are at our best. Malcolm is, although it's very comedic, it's certainly not cooning that he's doing at those times. He's getting his message across in a way that is in many ways just him, you know. And for the present day generation, there's so much for them, especially when you consider that right now we're dealing with the NBA Finals. There's so much that today's athlete could learn from Ali. You know, there's so much that they could learn not only from Ali, but also from all of those who were around Ali. You know, you have to remember that Ali lost 3 of his most prime years because he would not go into the war. Yet he was supported through that by other African-American athletes. You know, it is a highly politicized time. These brothers are politically astute. They are engaged. And they are in every way speaking their mind. And there's no doubt about that. There's no doubt that it's Ali, it's Jabbar, it's Bill Russell, Jim Brown, who are in every way asserting the dignity of the not only African-American athlete, but also African-Americans in general. They're displaying, from my perspective, what black leadership should be about. And that is, although you may be a multimillionaire at this moment, there is a larger link that money hasn't been able to obliterate, and it is that link to your people. And, you know, as someone once put it, get caught on the wrong road at the wrong time in the wrong city, and people will show you that, yes, even though you may play for the Celtics, you may play for the Lakers, but you're still black. And Ali never lost track of that. Never lost track of that. And he is really exposing the world to black nationalism and the Nation of Islam at the exact same time. So I yield with that. I think those are the things that today's generation could really learn from our dear brother.
Ashe, it's interesting that you mentioned the other athletes who, you know, Bill Russell, Jim Brown, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and others stood with Brother Ali when he, you know, said emphatically that he was not willing to go to war. I just tagged you in that post to Dr. Jones on Facebook, but it's a very good article, and if you have a chance to go back and look at it, it's called "I Got Your Back, Bro." The moment Jim Brown, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Russell, et cetera, stood up for Muhammad Ali. It says a group of prominent black athletes publicly stand in Ali's corner during the fight of the champ's life. And so it's a wonderful picture where he's surrounded by all of these black, strong black men, athletes, who, you know, basically said, you know, we got your back. And, you know, other than the fact that there's a real serious educational gap too many of our current black athletes, you know, not to say that about everybody, but, you know, this group of gentlemen and a lot of what we have now, comparatively speaking, we've allowed ourselves to be dumbed down even when it comes to sports. Because it's looked at more so than entertainment than a way to empower our people and empower ourselves. And that's unfortunate, Dr. Jones. It's an unfortunate that we've been diluted in such a you know, overt way to just be entertainers and those who go out and, you know, wreck their bodies and, you know, for a paycheck to, you know, a lot of them end up with nothing. You know, there's a lot of folks who were not like Brother Ali, who ended up destitute. Allen Iverson, you know, comes to mind, you know, as a, you know, very recent case. These brothers are dying broke after they've given their bodies to these sports and these sports team owners for decades. So it's just, it's just unfortunate. And I'm not sure if there is a way to capture that audience back, if that should be a part of our you know, accountability piece, where we're looking at folks who our children are looking at as role models and saying, you know, what you're doing is fine, but what you're doing is not enough. What do you think about that?
You know, I think that you're absolutely correct. But we have to be fair to the athletes. One thing that I will say is that Jim Brown, definitely Bill Russell, and undoubtedly Lew Alcindor, a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, were all highly educated men, not only courageous, but also highly educated. And one of the things that is that you want to say that this makes a difference, and there's a couple ways of looking at it, and the difference that I'm alluding to is the fact that Russell, Jabbar, Jim Brown, all of them dealt on a personal level with racial discrimination. Even when they were traveling as athletes at some point in their career, be it amateur, college, or the professional ranks, they dealt with that in a face-to-face way. Today's athletes don't. They're not facing that, but they do face the risk of being killed by a cop. They do face the risk of black-on-black violence. But your question of can we ever capture it again, I argue yes. You know, and in many ways, I'll give some credit to Brother LeBron James for the entire movement of, you know, I Can't Breathe, for him speaking out against Donald Sterling after he made those comments, the deposed owner of the LA Clippers. But what's happening now, and when you look at it and consider it, the 90s, what we would refer to as the Jordan years, the message was very clear, and the message has always been clear, that if the true superstars of the black world do not speak up, no one is safe. When Jordan refused to be a political spokesman, because in his words, Republicans buy tennis shoes too, he was truly pursuing the money. That meant something. And it meant that there was no one in the black sports world, not Jordan, and the other top figure during that time was Tiger Woods. And Lord knows he ain't going to have a racial consciousness with his cobbling Asian self. However, Jordan, and, you know, we had this thing called the Jordan rules. Well, the Jordan rules politically in the NBA, and really that migrated throughout sports, I would argue, was do not embarrass the label. Do not embarrass the league. And we had a dear brother who actually played with Jordan by the name of Craig Hodges. Craig Hodges is the only person other than Larry Bird to win the NBA All-Star three-point shooting contest 3 years in a row. He's in Chicago, which is also the location of Minister Farrakhan. He wanted to take his Chicago Bulls teammates to see, you know, a lecture by Minister Farrakhan. And it turned into a big thing in the sports world. Jordan refused to go. Now, Craig Hodges, the same year that he won his third NBA three-point shooting contest, after that year he was cut loose and never played for another NBA team. He would get tryouts, but he would never be, you know, kept around. And Hodges says, you know, how do you go from being the league's best three-point shooter 3 months ago to now you can't play basketball? So obviously it was payback. So I applaud LeBron, because if LeBron doesn't do it, if he doesn't issue a political statement, and he has, to the best of his ability. You know, we have to remember that LeBron left Akron St. Vincent St. Mary and went directly to the Cavs. So he hasn't necessarily had formal education, but he has done a very admirable job of being able to speak out on behalf of his people. So I think that LeBron is the sort of the key right now as far as black athletes being able to speak out without there being a harsh retribution against them. And I yield, Queen.
So comparatively speaking, though, Dr. Jones, like LeBron's kind of like the exception to the rule. And, you know, I think a lot of the other athletes seems like they were, you know, okay, so we're going to go ahead and wear the hoodies, you know, for Trayvon and, you know, the I Can't Breathe shirts. And, you know, but we don't know what long-term consequences. See, that's just the way the oppressor operates. You know, he might not get you right then, but trust and believe, you know, those owners, et cetera, have not forgotten that they stood in protest and that they did that, you know, with the hoodies and the T-shirts and things like that. So do you think that there might be some long-term repercussions from that? And if so, how can they prepare themselves for it? You know, because, you know, look at over the weekend, a black Miss USA, Miss America, whatever it is, was crowned. And white people are having a fit. And we're still in very much in that age where, you know, there's a first black this and there's a first black that and the first black woman this and the first black male that. So we haven't really overcome. So how can they, I guess, protect themselves from any future repercussions because they did take a stand?
There is no protection. They can't protect themselves. What they have to count on is quite simply that any retribution would be scandalous and would damage the franchise. You know, I think that we're at that point now where their political activism, I guess you could say their cute political activism of donning a shirt, of putting a hoodie on, what have you, really isn't even considered a difference-making factor. You get what I mean? It's cute. It allows the club and the franchise to look like it is culturally sensitive and diverse. But when you add it all up, I don't think that it really matters to these wealthy white men who are owning these NBA franchises, which are in any and every way businesses. And they're very cognizant and very aware of that bottom line. And that bottom line is winning a championship. You know, now you're going to have to behave a certain way, but I don't see it as a situation where they're going to be censored or whatever for their political activism, especially, and once again, when the superstar of the league, the very face of the league, is politicized and is out there saying things and doing things. Now, is it faddish? Yes. Is it grounded in anything? It's about as grounded as, I would say, Beyonce's Super Bowl performance was.
Mm-hmm.
It's about that grounded. It's about that meaningful. It's hard for, I guess I can say it's very difficult for us to really accept that and acknowledge that even at their best, even when they're really trying to be political, what they're doing is in no way rivaling or challenging the system that they should be resisting and fighting against. And I yield with that, Queen.
Ashe, we're going to check out another quick clip from Brother Ali, and it's called Why is Jesus White? It's about 6 minutes, so we'll be right back.
things are getting much better, but I always wonder when I went to church on Sundays. I've always been one to, I'm not just a box. I do a lot of reading, a lot of studying. I ask questions. I travel these countries and watch how their people live and I learn. And I always ask my mother, I said, Mother, how come is everything white? I said, why is Jesus white with blonde hair and blue eyes? Why does the Lord suffer all white men? Angels are white, Pope, and the Mary, and every, even the angels. I said, Mother, when we die, do we go to heaven? She said, naturally, we go to heaven. I said, well, what happened to all the black angels they took the picture? I said, oh, I know. If the white folks was in heaven too, then the black angels were in the kitchen preparing the milk and honey. So listen, you quit saying that, boy. I was always curious, and I always wondered why I had to die to go to heaven. Why I couldn't have pretty cars and good money and nice homes now? Why do I have to wait till I die to get milk and honey? And I said, Mama, I don't want no milk and honey. I like steaks and I said, milk and honey is a laxative anyway. They have a lot of bathrooms in heaven. So anyway, I was always curious. I always wondered why. You know, Tarzan is the king of the jungle in Africa. He was white. White man. I saw this white man swinging around Africa with a diaper on, hollering, oh! You all see Tarzan over here?
Right.
Tarzan? And all the Africans, so he's beating them up and breaking the lion's jaw. And here's Tarzan talking to the animals, and the Africans been there for centuries, and he can't talk to the animals. Only Tarzan can talk to the animals. I always wonder why Miss America was always white. All the beautiful brown women in America, beautiful suntans, beauty shapes, all tight complexions, but she always was white. And Miss World was always white. And Miss Universe was always white. And then they got some stuff called White House cigars, white swan soap, king white soap, white cloud tissue paper, white rain hair rinse, white tornado flow wax. Everything was white. And the angel food cake was the white cake, and the devil food cake was the chocolate cake. I said, Mama, why is everything white? I always wondered, you know, and the president lives in the White House. And Mary had a little lamb, his feet as white as snow, and snow white. And everything was white. Santa Claus was white. And everything bad was black. The little ugly duckling was the black duck, and the black cat was the bad luck. And if I threaten you, I'm going to blackmail you. I said, Mama, why don't you call it white male? They lie too. I was always curious. And then this is when I knew something was wrong. Won the Olympic gold medal in Rome, Italy. Olympic champion, the Russian standing right here, and the Pole right here. Is Poland considered a communist country?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm defeating America's so-called threats or enemies. And the flag is going, ton, 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 ton. I'm standing so proud. Ton, 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 ton. And I done whooped the world for America. Ton, 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 ton. I took my gold medal, thought I'd invented something. I said, man, I know I'm going to get my people freedom there. I'm the champion of the whole world, Olympic champion. I know I can eat downtown now. And I went downtown that day, had my big old medal on, and went in the restaurants. At that time, black things weren't integrated. The black folks couldn't eat downtown. And I went downtown, I sat down, and I said, you know, a cup of coffee, a hot dog. The lady said, we don't serve Negroes. I'm so mad. I said, I don't eat them either. Just give me a cup of hot dog. Said, I'm the Olympic gold medal. And 3 days ago, I fought for this country in Rome. I won the gold medal, and I'm going to eat. The manager, I heard her tell the manager, and she says, he said, well, I'm not the man. Now he's got to go out. Anyway, I didn't raise money. They put me out. And I had to leave that restaurant in my hometown where I went to church and served in their Christianity and fought and daddy fought in all the wars. Just won the gold medal and couldn't eat downtown. I said, something's wrong. And from then on, I've been a Muslim.
Yes, I was going to ask him about what attracted you to the
Muslim, truth, but the teachings of Elijah Muhammad on how black people's been brainwashed, how they've been taught to love white and hate black, how we've been robbed of our names in slavery, we were robbed of our culture, we were robbed of our true history, so it left us a walking dead man. So you got black people in all white country, and they don't know nothing about themselves, they don't speak the language, they're just mentally dead. And this is happening all over the world. But the first place that will rise will be the black people of America, and then the rest of them will. But I was one who heard the truth. And when I heard the truth about my name was not Cassius Clay, I know a black man in America named John Hawkins. Now, you know who John Hawkins was. He was a slave trader from England. But the white people at that time, if one had five slaves and his name was Jones, they would be called Jones property. If you was auctioned off to Mr. Smith, your name was Smith, identifying you as property of certain masters. So now that I'm free, now that I'm no longer a slave, then I want a name of my ancestors, Muhammad Ali. Like a Chinese, how could a Chinese look named Robert Smith? how would a German look named Edward Goldberg? A Jewish name. So when I heard that we don't have our names, we don't speak our true Arabic language, we were robbed of Islam, our true religion, and we've been made deaf, dumb, and blind in slavery, and Elijah Muhammad was taught by Allah, who we refer to as God, to teach us the truth that will free us. And when I heard it, I've been free ever since. I have no racial problems. I don't go where I'm not wanted. I'm proud, and Islam did it. So, and after these things that I heard in church, and preaching, and watching this and that, I knew something was wrong, but I couldn't pinpoint it. But as soon as I heard the truth that Elijah Muhammad teaches us in America, it made me accept it.
All right, welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Sign of the Times, brought to you by New Power Radio Network. Welcome back, Dr. Jones.
Oh, that boy is something. That's all I can say.
Yeah. He will definitely be missed, even though the way he used to communicate had been severely impacted by the Parkinson's, and he was still very much there, and he still recognized people up until, here recently and things like that. So he held on to his character despite his physical and health impairment. So we have nothing but love for Brother Ali.
You know, one of the things for me that I will always reflect upon with Ali, it is quite simply the idea of him joining the Nation of Islam, which I thought was an extremely courageous thing to do, especially while he's on the verge of fighting Sonny Liston. And most people thought Ali was going to get murdered in that fight. And yet at the same time, we have to also give Ali props and credit for eventually leaving the Nation of Islam. It is my favorite quote from Ali, and it says, "If you show me a man who believes the same thing at 50 that he believed when he was 20, I'll show you a man that has wasted 30 years of his life." There is a growth, there is a breath, of life that people should naturally traverse. You should constantly be growing. You should constantly be reevaluating what it is that you're participating in and what you're doing. And if you're not doing that, what exactly are you doing? You're in many ways just existing, standing still, and what have you. And one other thing that I will say about Ali is that although he may have not sat in a formal classroom, his mastery and quick-wittedness, but his mastery of history is absolutely astounding. And the way that he's able to explain to people how certain things are just ridiculous. Finding a German with a Jewish name, finding a Chinese man, with the name John Hawkins, It's absolutely hilarious, humorous, and ultimately eye-opening. And I yield with that, Queen.
That That's right. Ashe. I remember my brothers emulating him. And there used to be a little kit that you could buy that had the boxing gloves and like a you know, inexpensive pair of boxing shorts. And it seems like it had a some sort of belt to it as well. And I believe, wasn't there a Muhammad Ali doll too, Dr. Jones, or do you remember?
Yes, there was.
Okay. I thought so. So, you know, as happens when our ancestors transition, I'm sure all of that stuff's going to be on eBay and worth a heck of a lot more.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So, you know, the funeral service is Friday. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so. One of my friends plans on going. He is probably one of the biggest Muhammad Ali fans you'll ever come across. He's Facebook friends with like two or three of his daughters, you know, and almost met Ali at an event, but the crowd around him and the security pushed everybody away. And, you know, he's like, of all the moments in my life, I regret that one. He said, I should have went over there and just jumped through the crowd because that was truly his man, you know. And when I heard that, you know, Ali had passed, or, you know, actually the day before, I asked him a question. And it's a question that he didn't want to answer. But the question I asked was, what do you think God is going to say to Muhammad Ali when he sees him? What would be God's first words?
What was his response?
He didn't respond. He said that he didn't want to respond, one, because he was Facebook friends with his daughters and didn't want that read. But, you know, he was still holding out hope that Ali would pull through and continue to live. So he wouldn't give a response.
Wow, what would your response have been?
Negro, you crazy. That would kind of be what I think. I think that there's a place in heaven. Well, let me say it this way. I believe that God has the world's greatest sense of humor. And when you really think about it, some of the situations you've personally been in, how they ultimately have worked out and what have you, I could just see God laughing at a lot of things. I could see God and Richard Pryor standing next to each other welcoming Muhammad Ali home, laughing hilariously. But, of course, my image of God is black. And so that makes perfect sense to me.
Ashe. So, you know, we've got another great one that has transitioned. And it seems like, you know, every few weeks, you know, someone else is no longer with us. So how are we going to start to fill some of these shoes? You know, what are we going to do when all of our great leaders and performers and, you know, folks that we've emulated are gone, and we're left with, you know, these showboating Negroes out here?
We're going to suffer, period. We're going to suffer mightily, you know. Dr. John Henry Clark, and he was actually speaking about the Million Man March. He says, what you have now is a Hollywood revolution, lights, camera, activism. We're going to suffer because what we have is a bunch of people who have tremendous amounts of sizzle, but they have no meat to feed our people. And things have been so wrong that I would say our people aren't even looking for the meat anymore. They're fine with the sizzle. They've grown comfortable suffering. Many of them have. And when you consider the scatterbrainedness of Black leadership, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's a major problem. So we're going to suffer. We're going to suffer musically, culturally, socially, religiously, spiritually, and undoubtedly we're going to suffer as far as leadership goes.
Well, we're at the top of the hour. Again, you're listening to Tuesdays with Dr. James Jones here on Sign of the Times Block Talk Radio. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Put this on YouTube.
Yeah.
You heard this, dude.
I believe our greatest need as a people is to educate our youth. I believe that we need to move from all of the individuals and groups who are doing great things in their communities to uplift kids through better education, but we need to move from fragmentation to consolidation to coalition. They are simply products that help to create awareness.
Anytime you can put a symbol on a t-shirt that symbolizes unity, that's what we're doing.
Something for people to rally around. I use the colors of red, black, and green to reconnect African American youth with their culture. How do you know where you're going if you don't know where you've been and what you've been through as a people? At best, we are strongest together. And in that sense, I am driven and passionate about talking to as many people and groups all over this country who, again, want to help to maximize the mission, want to help to move forward our kids with better educational opportunities.
Hello, my name is Dr. James Thomas Jones III, and I am the author of an exciting new book titled Obruni, an African-American Odyssey Home. Most African-Americans have some desire to discover where they are originally from. Obruni is the story of my personal journey to find my ancestral home. Through a host of twists and turns, I must relate that I was able to have many of my most pressing questions regarding who I am and where I come from answered by some of the least likely sources. In fact, I was able to discover some surprising things during my trip to Ghana. If such things interest you, please support A Black Writer and visit Amazon.com and pick up your copy of Obruni, an African-American Odyssey Home, today. Thank you.
All right. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. It was in Sign of Times. Tonight we're talking about the GOAT, the greatest of all times, our beloved ancestor, Muhammad Ali. This last clip that I'm going to play is only about 5 minutes, so it won't be long. And Brother Ali is, it's actually some comments from Brother Ali's friends and colleagues, and it's not too long after they found out that he was suffering from Parkinson's and the damage that had actually been done to him fighting in the ring. So it's about 4.5 minutes. Please enjoy. It's called Ali, Never Feel Sorry for Me.
You're not no champ. Look at you, you're losing. You lost 3 rounds already. Come on, now, I hit you 4 times. It's worse, man.
Muhammad said, never feel sorry for me. He said, I'm great. But, you know, maybe he may not feel bad, but the guy that fought him do, because you see what he's going through.
He put it on the line, brother. The representation that he gave to the Black community will never be forgotten. No matter what.
I am the greatest.
It's just sad because, you know, it's sad because, you know, as a great guy, and hoping that maybe he could like live the kind of life that we live, you know. I'd love to see him do that, you know, because he earned that.
The last time I saw him, he was sitting down at a table drawing pictures. I walked up to him and I said, "Ollie, let's do it again." He said that for a moment, but he slowly turned to me. And his eyes opened up and he said, "Norton."
He was here as a fundraiser. It was for Parkinson's disease, and they were taking pictures for different newspapers and magazines. And McLean's magazine took a picture of Ollie touching my hair and him saying to me, "Hey man, you got some pretty hair."
Well, I last saw him, he was out walking, and I was just elated. I would like to see him well, Ollie, for the rest of his days here. I would just hope that that happens.
He had a big heart, good chin, fast feet, fast hands. What more would you want? You can't get anything else.
I love Ollie like a brother. And like a guy that is a celebrity, and like a guy who's done a lot for a lot of people. Ollie was one of those guys that made you feel good about yourself. You make everybody feel good, you know, everybody.
I look at Muhammad Ali today, especially, and I see a hero. Forget about some minority and all of that. This man was a hero to the world. And heroes, doesn't matter if they lost an arm or leg, they're still beautiful because of what they've done.
When I see him, he's love. Ali was all about love, man. You know what I mean? Like I say, he can't speak for himself, but we can speak for him.
All right, welcome back, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. The folks that you heard, I guess, paying homage to Brother Ali, it was Norton, George Foreman, and Joe Frazier. But I think there was one other brother that I couldn't quite recognize. But welcome back, Dr. Jones.
I'm glad to be here.
So the damage that was...
It's eerie for me to hear Ken Norton, because my dad is like the spitting image of Ken Norton.
Wow, yeah. I mean, he was brought to tears speaking about Ali in that video, and you could just tell, like, even though they fought each other in the ring, they were still brothers, you know, after it was all said and done. So it was phenomenal to see. It was a very short video. If you get a chance to watch it, I'm sure, you know, you can't help but be touched by it in your heart. We've got a caller in queue. I'm going to go ahead and open up the line because we're probably going to end a little bit early tonight. 7921, welcome to Sign of the Times. This is Queen Dara.
Peace is Queen Dara.
Peace,
Dr. Jones. Nice to hear from you.
Peace, sister. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fine. I was calling in because I grew up learning about Muhammad Ali through my dad. In fact, he he was able to meet Muhammad Ali when we lived in Pittsburgh and was able to get an autographed picture that was signed by Ali to me, which hung in my room for years. And so to hear about his death, yes, it touched me just as well as, you know, a lot of our celebrities that who have, you know, put in work, such as, you know, Ali. One of my biggest things that I admire about him was the fact that he refused to have his star on the Walk of Fame on the ground, because his exact words were he did not want anybody walking who didn't respect him to walk on his star. And I thought that was admirable of him to do that because, you know, I was just looking on Facebook, you know, for the, you know, since he had passed away, the comments that were made, especially the fact that, you know, white people really just didn't begin to admire him until he no longer was as verbal as he had been throughout his career. You know, so I can't even imagine all those folks who still did not have a level of respect for him would have disrespected his star as he thought so. So, you know, to have his star mounted on the wall, you know, speaks volumes because he was able to do that and still maintain his respect, you know. And the one thing I guess he was pretty much trying to you know, say it was, you don't have to like me, but you will respect me. And he demanded that respect, and I believe he got that respect when his star was mounted on the wall. And I'll peace with that.
You know, sister, the thing is for me, there's some people, and you know this very well, who are just downright hateful and disrespectful, you know, and it's one thing for us to have a disagreement, but it's a whole nother level of the hatred that some people have when they would that desecrate something that in many ways should be considered holy, which is holy. Ali's memory is one of the national treasures that we have in Black America. You know, there are very few individuals in any field, let alone the world of sports, who deserve the reverence that Ali deserves. And, you know, I'll be honest, off the top of my head, the only two individuals I can even think about are Ali and Arthur Ashe, deserving the type of reverence and respect that that I give them. And I yield with that, sister.
Ashe, thank you for sharing that memory with us, Queen Dara. And, you know, it's phenomenal the impact that he has on, you know, young, old, rich, poor, Americans, non-Americans, Africans, throughout the world. Brother Ali was known for, you know, speaking truth to power and standing, you know, on his ethics and morals with sincerity, integrity, and accountability. So, thank you so much for sharing that. I also want to thank you on the air, Dara, for filling in for me on Friday. Cricket had no service in my city, and it's my understanding that it wasn't only here. So Queen Dara, I hit her up at like, 20 minutes till 6 because I couldn't get on. And I had absolutely no phone service, and she rocked the entire Friday night monologue with Brother Bob Whitnick of the Decarcerate the Garden State, and she did phenomenal. So thank you, sis. Thank you for supporting me, and thank you for being part of the Sign of Times family. Also, you know, tell Dr. Jones about Saturday night's broadcast so he knows that we've expanded our format just a little.
Yes, we are currently have taken on the women who are incarcerated in the state of Mississippi. They are experiencing some true hardship. I mean, they've been doing this for a while, but they've just been able to actually be able to speak out about it again. It's been about roughly a year since the last time we've been able to hear from them. What they're going through, what these ladies are going through, is just unbelievable. You know, the conditions, the fact that, you know, like I said, decades and centuries ago, there wasn't even women prisons in existence. And now the bulk of the incarcerated, current incarcerated, are women now. And for them to be suffering through the conditions that they're living in is, there's not even words for it, you know, and my heart goes out to them. And, you know, both you and I, Queen Tahira, both stated that, you know, how we would be, you know, we're out of our minds when we don't have the necessities as women, you know, right there at our you know, at our fingertips, you know what I'm saying? So to imagine not having these on a regular basis, the necessities, the things that you need, you know, the separation from the children, it's just unbelievable. So, you know, I like to, for everyone to, you know, tune in to what these ladies have to say, you know, and take it into, you know, into consideration that these women really need some help and they need some voices out here, and that the state of Mississippi is showing them no mercy, no more mercy than they would the men. And it's ridiculous. And, you know, to hear these women crying out, you know, it hurts to your heart because, you know, you feel like you wish there was a whole lot more that you can do, but it doesn't mean that we can't do anything. So, you know, I'm proud to say that, you know, I'm working with, you know, a group of people that are phenomenal, and that we will continue to fight this fight. Because if we don't, who will, you know? And to reach out to these ladies, we have to continue to do this, and we need to bring more people in. And I think it's something that needs to really be addressed, because I think the women portion of mass incarceration isn't spoke on enough. I did a show once before on women incarcerated, and, you know, the response that I received on that show was it was unbelievable, because you'll be surprised how many people are unaware of the conditions, number one, that those who are behind bars suffer from, but the conditions of the women, because we're talking about things that are going on behind these prison walls that should not be happening, period, you know. And we have got to bring these issues out. We have got to seek out, you know, all the people who have any type of concern for women behind bars, and we've got to collaborate and get together and help these women out, because there's just no way that they should be living in the conditions that they're living in and dealing with the things that they're dealing with. You know, like I said, it used to be a point where women didn't even go to prison, and now the prisons are filled with a lot of women, and a lot of these women are poor Black women, Hispanic women, and white women, you know. So it's really more so a classism thing than it is a racism thing, because we've heard from all walks of life. And what was more shocking was that we actually got a chance to hear from younger women. You know, we usually hear from the youth, from the male perspective, but we actually got a chance to hear from, you know, the youth from the female perspective. And, you know, that just pulled my heartstrings something terrible, because, you know, at the end of the day, what's going on with the school to prison pipeline is that the pipeline is feeding now off of young girls, and the young girls now are suffering more consequences than the young men. So this is something that really needs to be addressed. And we need to heighten the awareness of people on what's really going on with women behind bars. And, you know, I just, you know, invite everyone to check out these stories and listen on Saturday to, you know, hear what these women have to say, because what they have to say is these are stories that can't be made up. And we've seen the pictures, we've seen the videos, you know, we've heard them over the phone. We hear the tears, although we can't see it. Sometimes hearing it, it's just as painful as seeing it. So, you know, I can't even put the words together to say, you know, how bad we really need to address this situation, and I'll yield with that.
Sister, what time is the show?
The show, well, because of the fact that they're operating off of one phone and they have a certain time that they're counted, they can't do a show until 8 p.m. Central Time. which is 9 Eastern for us. So it will run anywhere from 8 o'clock till the last time, I think last Saturday we did it till 9:30, you know. So I will have to check to see the status of the ladies now, because they, you know, they receive a lot of backlash. So I have to check with them to see if they will be available to do a show. But with the hopes of being, them being able to do a show, we should be on the air at 8 o'clock on Saturday, Central Time.
All right. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Queen Dara. We're also going to be discussing it on Thursday with Sisters of the Soul. So, yes, if you get a chance, to all the listeners, Dr. Jones and others, please tune in. Please support the freedom movement, because, you know, what affects them affects us too. And they guarantee occupancy rates up to 90% with a lot of these prisons. And they're getting those people from somewhere. And we can't forget, as far as our history goes, with the creation of the police department, they were originally developed to go out and capture slaves, and they're still doing that to this day. And think about it. The 13th Amendment is still very alive and very well here in the United States of America. So had your kids, had your wife, protect your families, take care of your business, and join us in these dialogues so we can help you know, bring these conversations to the forefront where they need to be, and work on some solutions. So thank you again, Dara. I love you, and I appreciate you very much.
Thank you, Queen Tahira. Much gratitude, and I love you too, sis. Peace.
All right, peace. So, Dr. Jones, in closing, you know, how would you want us to best remember Brother Muhammad Ali? I have another part of that question. Considering the damage that was done to a lot of the athletes, especially the boxers and football players, to the point where when they get up in age, you know, a lot of those things are coming to the forefront with health issues. My question on that was, do you think that they would have extended themselves in the same manner in which they did had they known the long-term effects? And, you know, what would you like us to remember most about Brother Ali and Aiel?
You know, I think that the sad and unfortunate answer to the second part of your question would be, I believe that they still would have extended themselves and participated in what they did. You know, it's sort of like if you were to ask someone, if I could bestow fame upon you, but it would take 20 years of your life away, would you still want it? Many people would take that deal. How should we remember Ali? You know, I think that we remember him quite simply as the greatest inside the ring and the greatest outside the ring. He is the gold standard for athletes, for black athletes. There is no one who did it better. There is no one who was as engaging, as thorough, as humorous, as inviting as Ali was. He is, for all intents and purposes, the best of who we are and what we could be. You know, Ali is the greatest, period. And I yield with that, Queen.
Ashe, enough said. He will live forever. And we must make sure that we tell our children and our children's children who he was, because he deserves that. He deserves a living legacy. So, please, you know, share and share him with the next generation. So thank you, Dr. Jones, as always, for your time here on Tuesday nights with Sign of the Times. And we appreciate all the callers and all the listeners, even if you chose not to sign to chime in. The fact that you're here means the world to us. So we'll see you tomorrow night. We're having a listening session with the Move 9, which was our original topic from last Tuesday to this Tuesday. But we switched up gears a little bit because of our honoring Brother Ali. So maybe next Tuesday you want to pick up Move again, Dr. Jones, or you want to move on to another topic?
You know, I would like to next Tuesday deal with the modern day black athlete and why he isn't more politicized than what he is right now.
Okay, sounds good. All right, you heard it here first, y'all. Do your homework between then. Tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, we'll be here with a listening session on the Women of Move. And then Thursday night, Queen Dara and I are having a session of the soul. And then Friday night, Brothers of the Sun will be back. So we love you. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 Eastern Standard Time. Peace.
Oh, Daddy. You're the best.
See all my critics wasting time.